doesn't do. Sometimes, particularly on such an occasion as this, to have any preconceived ideas, I'm not exactly suggesting that you do, but I suppose it's only human and natural that you should help certain persons, sometimes persons that you have in mind come and talk to you. But I would say it's always best to come with a completely open mind about any sort of preconceived ideas to whom in particular would like to come and talk to you. I know that for the kind of work that you're doing, the sort of people that you're endeavoring to reach, that you particularly do desire certain people from this side to come and talk, so that their message should bear some weight. And therefore it's probably quite human and natural that you should ask for certain people perhaps to come. But I would warn you, it's not a wise procedure. It's always best to come completely open-minded without any strong desire for certain person or persons. Because those things do set up a strange atmosphere. I hope you won't mind my statement, but it's really for your protection and your guidance.
Mm-hmm.
Especially one must be careful of impersonation. And I'm not suggesting such things happen here, that these things have happened and no doubt will continue to happen. And sometimes when the conditions perhaps are not particularly good for some reason or the other, elementals or souls who are not far removed from Earth, who are not necessarily evil, but who are perhaps mischievous, can come through and impersonate, and they know by your thoughts sometimes certain things that you may desire or certain people that you may wish to come, and there's always a possibility that unless there is a strong protection built around you and the instrument for elementals sometimes to push their way in. But this does not happen here, but it can happen if the conditions are not very strong, and for some reason or other, the power is the medium weak, and since there's so much nobler, these souls, it's much easier for them to contact, and one must be on one's guard against it. So it's best to have a completely open mind without any, as I say, preconceived ideas as to who should come.
Thank you very much.
Some of your friends, unfortunately, in a sense, get the blame. They say to you, do you ever get the messages from so-and-so? If you lose so-and-so, come speak, and probably people might say, well, if so-and-so can come, no doubt you can get messages from Shakespeare or Bacon or and so on, you see. But that's all very well. Well, you see, it's not possible to call up the dead. It's not possible to say, oh, well, next Tuesday I'm going so-and-so, and I'm here to ask the medium or the medium's guide to bring through Shakespeare or whoever it may be. That is quite impossible. Any medium or anyone that tells you that you can, by just the desire, communicate with any particular person at any given time is not speaking the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Because communication does not happen, does not work in that manner at all. In fact, the person may go for sounds with the hope and intention, desire of speaking, shall we say, to the husband or the son, as the case may be. And there may be a very, very close link indeed. In such a case there would be. But the whole point is that if that person is not present, or it does not perhaps wish to communicate, or for some reason cannot communicate, there's nothing that one can do about it. You cannot force these issues. These things cannot be commanded or demanded like an inner cooperate with one's ability to sit in harmony and in love and with an open mind and an open heart. These people who try to make a definite contact with a certain person, that's all right to approach, but there's no guarantee that they will achieve results. In fact, I would go as far as to say that an attitude and attention is the wrong one. It's human and natural in the case of a relation, dear to one, to do that. But to sit, as some people do, with a particular object, of making a certain contact with a certain person, and rather approaching it, shall we say, as some do, on a very personal and often a materialistic level, is all wrong. One must sit always with the idea of true spiritual communion, looking upon it as an opportunity to gain knowledge and experience which you can use to better your world and to help those who are in need. So many people approach the subject from the wrong perspective. They go into it often with a very self-centered, selfish motive, and it's not a all surprising that sometimes they come up against trouble and difficulty, and they often leave the subject disillusioned and disappointed, and they often blame the mediums and the controls, whereas actually, if they were to be sincere and honest in themselves, they are just to blame. After all, communication, as I see, is something far different from the average spiritualist realizes it to be or thinks it to be. Communication should mean completely lifting yourself, as it were, onto a higher mental spiritual level, away from earthly thoughts and conditions, to look upon it as an hour of sweet communion, and during that hour pray and to hope that you may be given the inspiration and the guidance spiritually, not only to better yourself, but to help yourself onto that higher level which we all aspire, but to help those less fortunate, to be of your service, to dedicate oneself in service, to forget self in service, not to post this, as so often many, many people do, with this selfish motive, and the very motive which so many approach the subject is so wrong, it's not a bit surprising that they get misled, they get misguided, that instruments who best would have shown great promise and could have been great instruments truly in the real sense are often brought down to a lower level, and in consequence the controls and the guides of woodwork through them and have endeavored to often, although they do not give up completely, you would say, they are often very much rejected and put to one side, and lower entities take over, and they banter, they bore themselves, as it were, choosing those who come and hopefully through the messages. You, fortunately, I know, do endeavor on the highest possible level, and if at times you have this natural desire to contact certain people, it's always for the good of others and the hope that you can propagate truth and illuminate minds, that it is always best to leave it completely and absolutely to our side as to who should come and as to what they should say, because it is important that those girls who are chosen, and often a person each time you come here is chosen to speak to you on a certain particular level, on points raised during the conversation which will benefit others in your world. We have a plan, and I want you to fully realize that we have got a definite plan, and in the sense of like a campaign that we have planned for you and for the work that you endeavor to do. Always we are bearing your work in mind. Always want you to realize that.
Thank you very much.
Is that Dr. Martin? No. Oh. My name will probably surprise you, because she probably will not even consider that I would possibly even be interested in this subject. My name is Holman Hunt.
Holman Hunt. Well, thank you very much.
When I was on Earth, I had very little personal knowledge of spiritualism, as you call it.
Mm-hmm.
I had some friends in the artistic field who head in the senses, and I was not myself terribly drawn to it. I think I automatically, quite naturally, realized that there was something to it, but I thought it was best to leave it alone. Mm-hmm. Since I've been here particularly, I have become tremendously interested in communication, and I have made a study of it. I've been, for many years now, endeavoring to discover all that I possibly can about communication and the methods of communication. And I find it an intriguing and interesting subject, and I've waited to do this there, as a matter of fact, myself, for some long time before I came, because I wanted to be sure that when I came, I would be able to speak properly, well, intelligently, and to some extent I hope to be able to overcome barriers which I've seen other people come back with from this day when they've endeavored to communicate. You should probably know I was an artist, and some people say I was inspired. Well, that was true to the point. I realized as I looked back on my work that there were moments that I was inspired. Because some people never cared for my type of work. And today I think it's rather old-fashioned and rather sort of thrown out. But that doesn't really worry me at all. Because when I look at a lot of the art, or so-called art of today, well, I know that they couldn't possibly accept my work.
You call it out, Mr.
Huff? No, I don't call it out at all. I think it is a form of inspiration, if you can call it that, from certain elementals on this side, and I think a lot of them are extremely fine mediums of a kind, and they definitely are controlled, but I wouldn't like to suggest that they're controlled by them.
Mm-hmm.
Their work certainly shows that, I'm afraid their work certainly shows that they're not inspired in the highest sense.
Do you still paint on that side of it?
Oh yes, I still paint. And I'm very happy to be able to still do. As a matter of fact, I should imagine you have well been told often that we have great places of learning here, great halls of instruction and learning. We have many forms and types of buildings. Architects do design great buildings. Artists such as myself do murals. And I have been working on a mural for a considerable number of what you would call years, although we don't have time in that sense. And I've still yet much to complete. But since I've been here, I've met many, many great souls, many great artists. Angelo, one of my greatest friends, and I certainly admire his work more than most. I always did. I think that his artistry, his ability, well, of course, I know now that not only, of course, had he such a natural aptitude for it, but he was heavenly inspired. Inspired by group films, he was given a gift which was used in the utmost. I cannot speak too highly of his work, and also many others I met. And we worked together. We worked, for instance, on the same canvas, which a lot of people, perhaps being artists on your side, would not altogether like. The idea of the point is that sometimes five or six big artists of the world, understand, but, can work together to make it there and in complete harmony, almost like one.
That would be the picture.
Do you have a scenery and all that things you do on Earth, a beautiful scenery like that? Or in your world?
And, do we have such beautiful scenery, you said?
There's all scenery like the mountains where you are and
You see, I think it must be extremely difficult for anyone in your world to picturize our world. For various very good reasons. Because whatever you try to visualize, no matter how highly inspired you may be, or no matter how you may desire to reach up to a high spiritual level in your conception of things, to a great extent you must be tremendously held down to by the conditions of your world that you cannot visualize the spiritual world without to some extent colorizing it with a material conception. But what I think one should say is that the our worlds are in a sense a reflection of yours, although perhaps some people might interpret it better as saying that your world is a reflection of ours. I'm talking here not about human beings so much as about nature itself, about landscapes and so on. We have this true every aspect of nature and surroundings as you have. But then again we have many other aspects which we cannot explain to you because, quite frankly, there are no ways in which you could do it. You cannot depict something for which there is no language. The same as you may be conscious through science of certain things which at one time were considered impossible, if they were ever considered at all. For instance, you have knowledge of the possibility of various things. You are feeling your way in a scientific field into the auric conditions around your world. You are plunging, as it were, into the atmosphere. Gradual science is discovering that there are certain elements, there are certain things there which they don't know very much about yet, but which they no doubt will discover a lot later on, but at one time would have been considered impossible. I mean, men just didn't even know that it's for centuries upon centuries that there were sound waves in the atmosphere. And the same applies, of course, to our world. I should say possibly our world, because there are numerous spiritual worlds of different levels. And those nearer to your plane are more similar, in consequence, to your condition of life. And they are the planes which the average person goes upon so-called death. But far removed from these spheres, there are spheres, if you like to call them such, there are grand, magnificent places in which not only do you find replica of earthly natural surroundings,
Come on, friend, that's all for interest.
No, interest in yours.
Let's
cut off. Excuse me. Very interesting. Finally appreciate.
Oh.
You really appreciate, I suppose, quite naturally. The earth picture of life. And to try to visualize the spiritual picture of life in which a human being has been raised to a very, very high level, living in conditions suitable for such a soul, seems difficult for you to grasp that he does not necessarily walk. For instance, we have learned that we can travel by the very power and essence of thought. I use the word thought, it's not quite accurate, but it's the nearest thing I can give you an expression. Here we are able to transport ourselves in a fleeting, what you would call, second of time, and be in an entirely different condition or environment, according to our desires. For instance, if I want to come to you, I can, by the mere thought, desire,
in a split second of your time, be present. A new world, to some extent, becomes a consciousness to me, as Jerry Martin put it. You see, it's all a matter of consciousness. We are in our own environment, living in a world to which we are fully conscious, and which therefore to us, because we are conscious with it, is solid with us, and has reality. If I want to come to your room, I just automatically desire to see, and I can be with you. And I enter to some extent, but not fully, mind you, but to some extent into the consciousness of your condition of life, which means that I am conscious of being present in a room such as this. I am conscious of the people in that room, but what is more important, I am conscious of their thoughts, of what is emanating from them, and if those conditions, those thoughts, those conditions that they give, as it were, or create, are conducive to me, and this applies to all cells here, then I can make a contact, or I can make a communication. And of course, this is one of the reasons why, I think, that in many circumstances, if not failures, are not on a very good high level, because as I said in the beginning, for many people, their whole attitude of mind is still materialistic. It's still personal to itself. It's so selfish that if I want to go, and of course naturally one does want to help everyone, but I could not contact a person on the level which I would want, and therefore I would consider it best not to make a contact at all. Whereas some other entities from the lower sphere are more in tune, more to some extent you would say the right mind, will make a contact. And I'm not suggesting that those souls are not necessarily honest. I've already spoken about souls who care. Impersonate and can mislead, that is true, for the average person coming from certain spheres of the earth is quite honest, and they will get you a picture and realization of their life, and they will help you if they possibly can, but in vain, and all of them on a material level. A lot of these psychics do, I suppose, some people say, good work. But it's always on a very mundane, very materialistic level. And really, it is no spiritual value, no spiritual help at all. And I would go as far as to say that the average spiritualist contacting these particular souls through particular types of mediums would be much better off without them. That is my opinion, not my opinion, because I do not think that this great truth can ever help to advance until the people themselves, who call themselves spiritual, are prepared to begin to think more clearly on the lines of spiritual progression rather than material progression and material personal aggrandizement, which so many of these people do have in their makeup, to really use this truth, use this subject on a level which in itself is not beneficial. But I would go as far as to say, is often self-degrading. Degrading to themselves, and degrading to those terms that endeavor to make contact with them, or would make contact with them, from those spheres where they help to be given. The whole tragedy of spiritualism is that it is on a very low level. And that is true to many of the people who call themselves spiritual. Spiritual word, I cannot imagine them spiritualists, which it does suggest people are spiritual. For the majority of spiritualists, apart from being spiritual, are much more material. That is the tragedy of spiritualism, why it's never become widely recognized. I know it's accepted more today, and it's considered quite respectable to be a spiritualist, and it used to be that, but that doesn't alter the fact that they haven't really got spiritual values at heart. There are here on Earth, there are people who care and who endeavor. And I can only say that where they are concerned, they do receive great help from spirit. And they are the ones whom we look to raise this great, wonderful thing to the highest possible level that people will be spiritually advised, spiritually guided, and help. That we have a long way to go, I'm afraid. People like Lodge, Doyle, Samarian, and many other friends that I've met here who had this movement at heart so long ago, who had such great hopes for it, are very disillusioned people, because they have not felt that spiritualism has made the advance that it should have done. And it's obvious they do, because people have been too content to keep their spiritualism on a low level. As long as they got contact of a kind, and as long as they see this and that person by the mundane messages that they gave through to them, that seems to be the sufficient there as far as the average spiritualist is concerned, which of course it was never intended. It's true that there are varying kinds of instruments that are used for varying kinds of work. But today, you have very few good instruments of a high caliber. You have practically no physical mediums anymore. The ones who could demonstrate to scientific minds, particularly the truth of this subject. People today do not seem to have the patience to develop their spiritual faculties and gifts. There are so many distractions in your world. People are much more inclined to expect everything to be done for them. You see, the whole approach is wrong. People are much more materialistic than ever they were. Whatever one may say about the Victorian age, there certainly was plenty of hypocrisy in it. But at least, whether it was all genuine or sincere or real, just isn't quite the point. But there was this attitude of giving to God some of the time of the individual. I don't say it was always sincere, but it was always genuine. You might say a lot of it was just routine. All of this is perfectly true. But there was this feeling, there was this spiritual part of man that should be encouraged and developed, and with more respect to human life, too. It seems to me that man is racing towards his doom. You would have thought by now that with the experiences of two major wars that man would have learned his lesson. No, he goes on plodding in the same materialistic way without any spiritual guidance to speak of. The church doesn't seem to give any sort of definite directive. One moment he talks about the Prince of Peace, and then in a time of emergency starts lifting the flags and the soldiers and the cannons. You see, Christ cannot be divided into individuals or groups of people. Christ is today the same as yesterday, the Prince of Peace, the man of love and compassion, and you must always see him like that, and we try to emulate and to follow him. Why, he says that we should emulate him and follow him. Truly, as children, we must learn and develop accordingly. But I'm afraid that few people have really any true grasp of what it is to be a Christian. In fact, there are many varying degrees of Christians and aspects of what a Christian should be. But really, in your world, it's difficult to know what a Christian is, what he's supposed to be, know what he's supposed to represent. And very few represent Christ, I can assure you. But that's another story.
Mr. Hunt, don't you think when they talk about the Christ spirit, it's the power that everybody has within them that they could use?
Yes, that's true. Anyone has within himself the power of the Christ, has within himself the inspiration. He likes to draw upon it and utilize it. You see, after all said and done, you're not just only physical frames, physical bodies, you are also spiritual bodies. But you see, the spiritual aspect of man is so enmeshed and immersed and so sort of pushed down that he doesn't seem to give himself. The spiritual part of man, the spiritual nature of man, isn't given the opportunity to exert and to fit it. So man is taught from birth to live a materialistic existence. It's taught him, it's pushed into him, it's fed into him from childhood as he grows up into youth, from school to business and so on. Man is taught to be a materialist. Whatever people may say about teaching them spiritual values, which to some extent an effort made, it's true. But man doesn't know anything about his spiritual forces, spiritual power, and what he can achieve by developing his spiritual faculties and gifts. As a child is sent to school to learn the various necessities, such as reading and writing or what have you, so he should be taught equally to use his spiritual gifts, to develop them, so that he can be truly a spiritual person in balance and in harmony with the material aspect of his nature. You see, you're taught to go in one way. You're taught to develop one aspect of your nature, not the other. If one were taught from childhood these truths, these spiritual truths, these spiritual values, how to use one's spiritual faculties, and then as you expand and grow, you work in harmony, the dual personality, if you like to call it that, of man, would become so in harmony that there would not be and could not be these terrible disasters that enter into your world. There could be a greater understanding between peoples and nations. Man would have a directive. As it is, man has no real directive at all. He just flounders from one generation to another. He flounders. He doesn't think. You know what flattering, but there's always that possibility that if he keeps on and on indefinitely, that he will one day sink. And it could be the end of the human race. It's a possibility. And one does not dwell on this, one does not like to think about it. But in science, properly understood and properly applied, whatever scientists discover, it's obviously there to be discovered, and it should be utilized for the good and the welfare of the human race, for which it is intended, but unfortunately it's invariably used by government for their own ends, materialistic ends, and people in consequence live in fear, and generations of new children are born in fear. This fear breeds more fear, and eventually breeds war. And that is the one thing that we dread. We are so concerned about your world, man, because although you are told that you're really amassing power for prevention of war, it's obvious that sometimes someone who can strike the match will fit the whole world ablaze. So you cannot keep on amassing, you cannot keep on getting more and more without something happening. You can only hope and pray it can be avoided, and that is one of our main reasons for coming to you, to avoid this disaster, to change men's minds into the ways of peace and of love and harmony. You may say to me, oh yes, well, it takes two to make the war, and it takes two to make harmony and peace. In other words, it takes this nation and that nation. And I agree, oh, that's true. But someone, sometime or other, has got to show the lead, but to stop the bulldozer. And if someone does that, then of course something eventually will happen. You cannot keep on building up and up and up without something happening. And sooner or later, something must be done about it.
Don't you think it's time to set up a power and wealth that is governs the world to such an extent now?
Yes, I think to a point that's true. I think that was far more true some 50 years ago. I mean, England, for instance, when she was a great power in the world, I think she could quite genuinely be accused of that. After all, English were a great nation of people who went out to conquer and to take unto themselves other lands, and many black spots and marks in the history of it. And I think possibly many years ago this was much more apparent than it is today. I think this giving up, gradually giving up of colonies and so on, giving people their freedom to choose themselves, is a step in that direction. I don't think today that there is that desire for aggrandizement, for power upon the part of England. And I don't honestly think that any particular nation is seeking power today. I think the whole root of evil is that everyone's afraid of everyone today. I think that no one wants war. But the point is that everyone is so feared that their neighbor may be stronger and deal with a death blow, that they're all preparing and making sure that they're that much stronger, which is not futile. Sometimes too, some great nation has got to come out into the open and say, well, this is absolutely ridiculous. We just cannot go on like this any longer. We are wasting our energy and our time, and above all, our monies, which could be used for the good of humanity, the good of our people. We are not getting anywhere at all. It's stalemate. Let's be sensible and rid ourselves of all this fear and utilize all our energy and time and effort and money into helping our people, helping the world. Let us become a united world. That will come. I feel it must come. I dare not think what could happen otherwise.
The difficult part is that it rather fascinates that you there is an afterlife. So many don't believe in an afterlife. And they don't know they
could be after everyone realizes the truth of spiritual things, if they realize the truth of a life after death and the communication, what all this implies, what it can mean, I think there could be a complete change in the whole of the human race. But we've also got to remember and realize there are so many barriers which have been broken down. There are so many different religious bodies and organizations at war, if not in a physical sense, mentally at war, one with another. There are all kinds of creeds and documents, there are all the varying races, there are all the differences of opinion and outlook and religious fervor and lack of it and against anything. We are up against so many, many isms, and it is all these isms that bring tragedy into the world, whether they are religious or political. They are the curse of the world, all these isms, always have and always will be. Instead of trying to truthfully realize, that they are all part of God's kingdom, all part of His will, that they have within themselves the power to release themselves, to overthrow these forces which hold them in bondage. And realize that God isn't contained in one church or another, but God is all around and about you, within you, that you are a spiritual being here and now. You do not need Him. In fact, I would go as far as to say, until man releases himself from all these isms, there can be very little hope of spiritual progression. That is what we're trying to do. I don't like the word spiritualism. I don't particularly like spiritualism as such. When I say I don't like, I don't want you to misunderstand the expression. I like everybody. I love all human beings. But they are, to me, invariably being misled because of their own personal, self-opinionated aspect towards things which are fundamentally of God. They are so afraid for revelation. They're so afraid to throw aside all these chains that bind them and be free. Until the man is free of impotence and free of all these materialistic conceptions of God and his word, until they free themselves of all the myth and the legend and the apocryphy, they cannot help to be free to see truth. Truth can only be revealed when man is free. And that's why I feel we have such a tremendous task. In other words, what we've got to do, we've got to undo a piece of a lot that's been done over centuries of time, which is tied in men's minds up like little compact parcels. And for so long have their minds been tied up like these parcels that they don't even know what's inside it. And until we can unravel all these knots and get all these loose ends, straighten out and get a clear line, it cannot hope for true progression. And I think spiritualism has done, generally speaking, is just as much to blame as any other ism, because the spiritualists themselves have not approached it. Or if they have begun to approach it in some cases, very few have approached it on a true spiritual level. They have brought this truth down to their level. That's why it hasn't made the progress it should have done. That's why Doyle Lodge and the rest are terribly disheartened and disappointed. Because spiritualism goes to any spiritualist church, doesn't know where you go, any organization, any society, and what do you get? On a very low level, majority of it is on a banal, terribly low materialistic level, pandering to the ordinary minds of ordinary little people who just do not aspire, too lazy, not that they get what they want materially. We are very disheartened and disillusioned. That's why when we have people like you who do try to bring this onto a level which can be understood and appreciated truly in a spiritual sense, that we can do some good, we can make some effect, we keep on trying. We're grateful to people like you. Anyway, I must go, the power is waning, and I shall hope to come again sometime, and of course many others.
Oh,
well, goodbye, and God bless you.
Thank you,
Mr.
Hunt. Thank you, Mr. Hunt.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Thank you, Mickey.